The Asian Classics Institute presents What the Buddha Really Meant with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in November of 1998. This is the beginning of Class 8.
The time in the class to buckle down, okay? Like, this is where you get tired, all right? I keep going. And I really want to thank Thomas and his crew for doing homework. Like, he doesn't get any sleep on Saturday night. He's camped out there. And I don't think they even got any pizza. But anyway, we're pretty far into the mind-only presentation. By the way, the last two classes, 9 and 10, will be the middle-way presentation, okay? Traditionally, in the monastery, we spend 4 years on the middle way, so they don't study it much when they study Chang'e, which is, they leave the second half of the book, and they cover mostly the first half of the book, which is a mind-only presentation. So, but I figured you better get a little bit at the end, since it's the last official ACI course, that, you know, better that we ended on a Madhyamika note. So, tonight we're going to polish off one more detail of the mind-only school. Remember where we are. We finished the Bodhisattva's question. We finished that sutra in the first six classes. And then in the seventh class, we started to get later interpretations of it by Arya Sangha and his gang. Okay, Arya Sangha being the person who re-woke, anyway, brought back the mind-only school system. You know, some people say he founded it. It's not exactly so. I mean, our Lama in the monastery was very careful to say he just, you know, like reawakened it, because it was dormant after Lord Buddha taught it. And so we're studying mostly his compendium and his Bodhisattva levels, and in there we start to get more detail on what the sutra means. And that's where we left you off last time. At the beginning of the last class, Arya Sangha said, look, you want to understand what emptiness is? Understand it as what you have left over when you remove two extremes, when you remove two extreme ways of thinking. If you remove this ta, meaning this wrong idea and its object, and then this ta, the object of the opposite wrong idea, then what you have left over from these two extremes in the middle is emptiness, and you can understand emptiness that way. So he got into the idea of dondok and kundap. Okay, dondok meaning inventing something when it's not there. And then kundap meaning when something really is there, you refuse it. Okay, and those are the two extreme views. What they hold on to is called the two extremes. And those two extremes don't exist. Okay? These are, since they're wrong views, the thing that they hold is something which is false and therefore doesn't even exist. Okay? It can exist in imagination. You know, you can say, you can imagine a pumpkin smashing the Twin Towers, but it doesn't exist in reality. Okay? So we tried to find last week the result of the, when you eliminate this extreme, when you eliminate this extreme, supposedly what you have left over is a real pure idea of emptiness, okay? So I'll go really quickly over the two extremes again, extreme views. Drondok related to one of the three categories of the mind-only system, right? We have Kundaks, the Shenwangs, and Yongdrups, right? We have constructs, we have dependent things, and we have totality, meaning emptiness according to the mind-only school. When you do Kundap, a classic Kundap, mainly, sorry, Drondok, okay, Drondok. When you see something there that's not really there, which of the three categories is the main one that we're talking about? Yeah, Kundaks, which according to the mind-only school system, don't exist by definition. And Drondok, which tends to see something there when it's not there, thinks what? That they do exist by definition, okay? What are Kundaks? Well, there's existing kundaks and there's non-existing kundaks, okay? Existing kundak would be the fact that Nanette is called Nanette, okay? That exists, okay? What's a non-existing kundak? The fact that Nanette is called Nanette, that could be something which is naturally existing, which exists by definition. She should be called that, okay? Okay, and from her own side she's called that, or something like that, okay? So that's an example of an existing concept about her, or a construct about her, and that's an example of a non-existing construct about her, okay? And the one that looks at, you know, the state of mind that looks at the non-existing one, the evil boss, who's an evil boss no matter what, you know, the fact that he's called an evil boss, and the fact that the words evil boss apply to him, that is a self-existent thing. That comes from its own side. It has its own true reality, independent of how I think. I'm not making it up. He is an evil boss. Okay? That belief that the words evil boss apply to him self-existently, by definition, is wrong. And who thinks that that's true? By the way, that's Drondok, okay? That's seeing something there when it's not there. You're making up a boss who deserves the name evil boss from his own side. Okay? And it gives you all the suffering you ever have, because it makes you do bad karma. Okay? Those of you studying the Wheel of Life, Nipa Duche Gile, link number two is collecting bad karma. What's link number one? Ignorance. Okay? And the mind-only school would agree. They'd say, you do bad karma, you say bad things, you fight back as your boss, because you have ignorance about him. Okay? So who is it that's doing the Drondok according to the mind-only school? Who tends to see evil boss as being deserving the name evil boss from his own side? Yeah, ignorance has that problem. And it incites you to do bad karma. And then the rest of the 10 links of the Wheel of Life are triggered by that process until you get to number 12, which is Gashi. Okay? And then the Heart Sutra says, Marikpa me. Marikpa sepa mefane gashi me. You want to shut off gashi? Shut off marikpa. You want to stop number 12? Stop number 1. So it's not crazy when Michael Roach gets up and says, you don't have to get old or die. The Buddha said that. That's the whole point of Buddhism. That's the whole point of the Wheel of Life. Okay? Is that you can avoid number 12 if you stop number 1. It's like turning off a faucet and stopping a problem in the drain, you know, 20 feet away. Okay, if you turn off the faucet at number 1, number 12, eventually number 12 stops. Okay, so that's the idea. So ignorance believes that. Okay, ignorance believes that. Now we get to the other extreme, Kundap, right? Which of the three groups of the mind-only school does Kundap concentrate on? Shenwangs and Yong groups, okay? Changing things and emptiness according to the mind-only school, which is called totality. And what does it think about them? It's denying something about them which they really do have. It says they don't exist by definition. This is a wrong state of mind, a mistaken state of mind, an extreme view that says, this pen, and the emptiness of this pen do not exist. I'm sorry. Yeah, do not exist by definition. Okay? When in truth they do exist by definition. Why, according to mind-only school, do they exist by definition? It has its own identity from its own side. Prove it. It came from its causes. I mean, how could it go through all that work of coming from causes, you know, being oil being made into plastic, plastic being formed into a pen, and then not exist from its own side? Are you kidding? You know? Okay, that's what they say. It worked so hard to be a pen, and now you're telling him he can't be a pen? You know, from his own side? You know, they say the fact that it was caused, I mean, that nails it down. Come on. It has to be, it has to have some identity from its own side. Because it had self-existent, outside, external causes making it that way. So of course it's, the causes were that way and the result of the causes were that way. Come on, it went through so much sweat to become a pen and now you're saying it can't be a pen? Okay, they say you can't say that. Okay. So, now we get into today's class. Who is it that said this thing doesn't exist by definition? Who is it that makes this extreme? Who makes this extreme mistake? Yeah, sorry, no, who? Madhyamika. Yeah, Madhyamika, okay? The middle way people, those crazy nihilists who run around saying nothing exists, okay? They're the people who say that this, you know, and then we say to them, excuse me, you know, does the pen exist by definition? And they say, no. And then they say, well, how does it exist? Please tell me. In fact, in the text of Arya Sangha, it says, Tsedang Denpa. What does Tsedang Denpa mean? Tsedang Denpa Sharipu. What's it mean? Venerable. In the Heart Sutra, it means, you know, junior monk. But it's a way of addressing a monk in an honorific way. Oh, venerable sir. You know, so when the middle way, mind only starts attacking the middle way, they say, oh, Tsedang Denpa, you know. Oh, venerable sirs. If it doesn't exist by definition, then could you be so kind as to tell me how it exists? You know, and they say, oh, it's just your projection. And they say, oh, like a kuntak, right? And the middle way says, yeah, right, like sort of like a kuntak, you know. And so then they say, oh, okay. So let's say that this thing doesn't exist by definition. Then pray tell, what are you projecting onto? Because you just said it didn't even exist. You know? You went around saying a Shenwang doesn't exist by definition. The main thing in the universe that exists by definition doesn't exist by definition. So it can't exist at all. Now, what are you putting your projection onto? What are you projecting onto? You just said they don't even exist. So what's there to project to? You know what I mean? Okay? What is it that, what is the cylinder that you project pen onto? You just said it didn't exist. Okay? Because you said there's a changing thing in the world that doesn't exist by definition, and that's impossible. So since nothing exists, what the hell are you projecting onto? Where's the cylinder that you're projecting onto? If everything is projections, what are you projecting onto? Because you just said they don't exist. Okay? And then what is the mind? Now, that was the end of the last class. Now we go on to the new class. Okay? Middle way school, how do you answer? Venerable sirs, Kyabha Machun. Oh, be careful. Kyabha Machun means, I agree that they don't exist, but I can still say they're projecting. Now you got to say teacher. Teacher means, oh, who said that? Who said they didn't exist? Okay, teacher means, hey, who the hell said that? I didn't say that. I didn't say they didn't exist. Okay? What does the middle way school say? I never said that they didn't exist. I didn't never say that the cylinder didn't exist. I said it didn't exist by definition. You want to know what we think? Here's what we think. Okay? Where's this thing? Now remember from last class, the mind-only school kept sneaking this thing past the middle-way school, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you say the cylinder doesn't exist at all, wait. We never said that, okay? We didn't say it was mepa. Okay, say mepa.
Mepa.
Mepa. Mepa means doesn't exist at all. Okay, it doesn't exist at all. All we said was it didn't exist by definition, which in our school you can also say as it doesn't exist dindamdu, okay? So say dindamdu. Mekyang. Dindamdu. Mekyang. Dindamdu means ultimately. Okay? Ultimately. Okay? In an ultimate way. Okay. Me means doesn't exist. And kyang means but. Okay? But, dot, dot, dot. Okay? You're going to get another half, okay? We didn't say the cylinder didn't exist. We just said it didn't exist ultimately, okay? And it's a big difference. Say, Tanyedu.
Yu.
Tanyedu.
Yu.
Tanyedu means nominally speaking. Nominally speaking. Okay? Tanye means a name or a term. Tanyedu means nominally speaking. Yu means, come on, they exist. The cylinder exists. You're nominally speaking. Okay. Nominally speaking. What does nominal mean? I mean, how does the middleway school think that this pen does exist? Through your projections. So nominally means by virtue of your projections. Whether they be verbal, this is a pen, or whether they be mental, this is a pen. Okay? Either way, that's nominally speaking. Okay? Would there be a pen here independent of your projection of it being a pen?
No.
No, it would only be a cylinder. Prove it. Dogs don't have projections of this as a pen. They have projections of this as a chewable thing. If it could exist out there as a pen without your projection, then the dog would say, oh, here's a pen. Okay, and they don't. So they're not having that projection. Okay, and that's all. So as a thing which I create as a pen because I'm compelled to by my past karma, okay, impressions in my mind, imprinted there when I did good things or bad things in the past, okay, there's a pen there. Nominally speaking, meaning projectionally, there's a pen. But take away the projection and try to find a thing without the projection, nothing's there. You won't find a pen there. There is no pen there once you take away my thinking of it, the cylinder, as a pen. Once you remove my thinking of the cylinder as a pen, there's no pen there. That's all. So, now I got a question for you. When the middleway school says, ultimately speaking, what do they mean? In and of itself, independent of your projections, independent of what your karma, the karma is playing on the screen, you know, independent of all that, which means ultimately speaking, yeah, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. Okay, yeah.
What's projection?
Your karma from the past is a state of mind. Yeah, and that is also projection. Yeah, no problem. In middle way, no problem. What's the problem with that? Of course it's still a projection. Okay? When you focus on your mind, it's projecting. You're projecting a mind. What do arhats really remove their mental afflictions? Diamond cutter sutra people can answer easily, especially those of you who traveled around the world and heard it 20 times already. Does an arhat remove, when you reach nirvana, do you remove your mental afflictions from your mind? If you're going to be a Heart Sutra type of mystic, what will you say? No. Those people who remove mental afflictions from their mind mentally don't remove any mental afflictions from their mind. Get it? I mean, Lord Buddha would say, get it? You know? Meaning what? Due to their past good karma, when they focus on their own mind, they're forced to project it as having no mental afflictions. It's very cool. They did not remove mental afflictions from their minds. They collected such good karma that good karma, when they look at their own mind, they're forced to not see any more mental afflictions. And that's the only way you ever reach nirvana. And that's a shortcut. I mean, actually, it's the only way. It's the fast way and it's the only way. And you want to remove your mental afflictions? Just clean up your act. Keep your book. Keep your bodhisattva vows. Keep your vows. And then one day you look at your own mind and you won't see any more mental afflictions. Because you'll be forced not to see them because your mind is also projection. Yeah. Now you will see your mind. You'll be forced to see a mind and you'll be forced to see it as having no projection. Sorry? No, you always see your mind. Consciousness never stops. After you get enlightenment, consciousness continues forever. Okay? There's never a moment in the history of all time that you have not had consciousness. And even after you reach enlightenment, there will never be a moment that you don't have consciousness. It's forever. It's the idea that the mind stops when your body dies is a new idea invented in the West, and it's a stupid idea. Okay? I mean, don't think of the the Asian people as being somehow mystical or something like that. They're totally right. They've always been totally right. And this idea that the mind stops because the body stops is a newfangled, foolish idea of some people in the West after about 1500. You know, it's just a weird idea. Okay, and it'll go away someday. Okay, it's just a popular thing right now. Okay, the mind is independent of the body in that way. You can put an atomic bomb in your... You can hug an atomic bomb and switch it on, you know. You can't get rid of your mind. It'll be there 2 minutes later. Okay? Really, you can't destroy the mind. Absolutely no effect on the mind. Why? It's not physical, come on. Okay? Atom bombs only destroy physical things. Yeah. Yeah, good, okay. Right. Yeah. He said, what about the 14 unanswered questions? Lumaten Chushi. By the way, Lumaten normally means karmically neutral. Here it has a totally different meaning. Lumaten means the Buddha didn't choose to answer. And they asked him, you know, does your mind go on forever or not? And he said, I can't tell you. Meaning, he knew that if he said yes, they would take it to be a self-existent yes. And he knew if he said no, they would take it to be a self-existent no. Given the fact that no matter what answer he gave, they would take it the wrong way, he said, I'll answer you later. Okay? And when you become a teacher, you'll find out that you have to do that a lot. Okay? All right. Tanya to you means do exist nominally. Okay? So now we get into a whole new can of worms. Okay? This statement by the middle way school people, we just meant it didn't exist ultimately. We didn't mean it didn't exist nominally. Everything does exist nominally. This is going to start a new fight. Okay? And the next section of the Chang'an Lekshin Yimbo is a huge fight breaks out between the middle way school and the mind only school. So we're going to talk about that. So let's pretend I'm a mind-only school person, and Patricia Weil is a... I'm sorry. Yeah, you could be a... No, you be mind-only, I'll be middle-way, okay? And I say... I'll be middle-way, okay? I say... you be middle-way, I'll be mind-only. Okay. Why do you say everything is a projection when you deny the very thing you're projecting onto? Why do you say everything is a projection? You middle way, I'm mind only. Okay. No, I didn't get that far yet. You say everything's a projection, right? Is that true? Do you middle way guys say that? Do you say everything exists just through your projection? Yeah, right. By your custom. You can add anything you want. Okay, you guys are so far out that you can keep adding whatever you want. I'm still going to beat you. Okay, yeah. Do you guys say everything is just a projection of your past karma, whatever you want? Okay. So, and you have to project onto something, right? Like there's a cylinder, and then you have to project that it's a pen, right? Like there is a blue and white cylinder, right?
Right.
Right? So you're projecting on, and that cylinder is something that doesn't even exist, right?
No, I didn't say it didn't exist.
Good. Now she's being a good middleway school. Oh, you didn't say it didn't exist?
No.
Then what are you saying? Sorry, no,
doesn't exist.
Oh, she says, I didn't say it didn't exist, I just said it didn't exist ultimately. Okay, I didn't say it doesn't exist nominally. Okay. Oh, and ultimately would mean like what, by definition or something like that? Yeah, right. So you're saying this pen doesn't exist for its own time, right? Huh? She's mine only, she has to say. Oh, who are you? So you say this thing doesn't exist from its own side. And it doesn't exist ultimately. So according to you, nothing exists ultimately.
Oh, be careful. No, wait.
No. According to you, does anything exist ultimately? Take away the projection and does anything exist?
No.
No, nothing exists ultimately. So the ultimate doesn't exist. Huh?
The ultimate is
the absolute. Wait a minute. Let's go back. You guys are really confusing. You Maya middle way people. You just like greased pigs, you know. You never stay still. We'll ask you again. Does this pen exist ultimately?
No.
So are you saying nothing exists ultimately? They do say that. Middle way does say that. Yeah. Because nothing exists independent of your projection.
Right.
If you take away the projection, there's nothing there. There's no pen there. It's just a blue and white cylinder. Until I think of it as a blue and white cylinder, there's no... Yeah, until you project it. So you're saying nothing exists ultimately. Just checking. Right? Nothing exists ultimately. So there's no ultimate existence. I didn't ask that.
So
is there any ultimate existence or not?
Yes.
How can there be if nothing exists ultimately? You guys are really confusing. Just try to get it. You guys want to talk it over and then let me know? That's what they say in the debate ground. I'll be back in 5 minutes. And then you guys talk it over. Is there any ultimate existence? Does anything exist ultimately?
No.
No. So is there any ultimate existence?
No.
She said no. So there's no ultimate, right? Is there any ultimate or not? If nothing exists ultimately...
Is there any end?
Oh, what do I mean by ultimate? What do you mean by ultimate? I'm asking you. Tell me according to you. Tell me according to your school, is there any ultimate? Is that ultimate? Yeah, okay. Good answer. Okay. She's trying to get out of it, and she did. Okay. The question is, even though nothing exists... Now, middle way, according to the middle way, does anything exist ultimately? No. Because ultimately, in the middle way school means...
Independent
of your projection. Okay? So we say, yeah, nothing exists ultimately. Existing ultimately, nothing exists ultimately according to the middle way... Because if you took away the projection, this could never be a pen. Okay? That's because something that's ultimate would have to be independent of your projection, existing from its own side as a pen, whether or not you were there to think of it as a pen. Okay? But does that mean that ultimate doesn't exist? No, it doesn't mean that. So big difference in the middle way school between ultimately and ultimate. Okay, so don't forget the difference. Here it is. And this is the easy way to spell it. Say dindam.
Dindam.
Demba.
Demba.
Dindam.
Dindam.
Demba.
Demba.
Dindam means ultimate. Demba means, it's sometimes translated as truth, and sometimes maybe better translated as reality, ultimate reality. Okay. Does ultimate reality exist, Miss Middle Way? Does ultimate reality exist? Yes. And it's the fact that nothing has any nature of its own. Okay, how's that? Okay. It's the fact that nothing has any nature of its own. Emptiness. Okay. According to us, Middle Way people. Okay, us Middle Way people. Dundan Dambar, ultimate reality does exist. Okay. As opposed to Dindambar or Dindamtu, meaning ultimately things existing. They both mean ultimately things existing. Both of these expressions, Dindambar and Dindamtu, mean ultimately. All right? Do things exist ultimately? Not at all. Okay? Do things exist? Can something exist as ultimate reality? Of course. What is that? Emptiness. Okay, you gotta get used to that. Big difference in this school. Does anything exist ultimately? No. Does anything have ultimate existence? No. Does ultimate reality exist? Yes. Does anything exist as ultimate reality? Yes. Okay, big difference. Okay, you gotta get used to it. Okay? Get used to it. Okay? Got it? Right. Right. Ultimate reality itself exists ultimately or not?
No.
No. No. It's also a projection. Okay? I'll ask you again. Does ultimate reality exist itself exist ultimately?
No.
Middle way school?
No.
No. Okay? Because if it did, like when an Arya was like perceiving it directly, or when you thought about it intellectually, you'd have to do so without being forced to do so by your karmic projections. Okay? How's that? All right? Now, this is directly from the middle way school as presented in, you know, by Arya Sangha. Okay? Say Chu. Cham Che. Ki. Ngo Ni. Mepa. Ni. Dendam. Demba. Yin. Okay. Chu means what? Dharma, meaning existing object, in this case. Okay. Tam Che means all of them. Okay. All of them. Ki means all of their, okay, possessive. Right. What's Ngo Ni? I'm translating it as nature of their own. Okay, it means very nature or something like that. Okay, nature of their own. Mepa. In this case, it means they don't have. Okay, if somebody says, you got any money you can loan me, the guy will go, in the monastery, go, Mepa. Meaning, I'm broke myself. Okay, so Chetan Che Ngo Ni Mepa means the fact that no existing object in the world, in the universe, has any nature of its own. Okay. The fact that no existing object in the universe has any nature of its own. Okay. By the way, some translators, baby translators, say the fact that every object in the universe doesn't have a nature of its own. We don't say that in English, you know. Everybody in this room doesn't have money. We say no one in this room has any money. Okay, I mean that's just in English syntax. If you're learning Tibetan and you're learning to translate, please, you know, say no object in the world has any nature of its own. That's all. You don't say in normal English, although you could say it in translator English, every object in the world doesn't have any nature of its own. Okay, that doesn't make sense in English. Okay, Dundam Demba Yin. Say Dundam
Demba
Yin. Yin means that's what it is. Yin means that's what it is. What? Dundam Demba. That's what ultimate reality is. You want to know what ultimate reality is? It's the fact that nothing in the world, including this pen, has any nature of its own. Does it have any nature of its own?
No.
I'll ask you first. Does it have any nature of being a pen of its own?
No.
No. But doesn't it have any nature of being white of its own?
No.
You got to say no. Okay. Does it have any nature of being a cylinder of its own?
No.
No, you see? You keep going down in level. You'll never find anything. You know, when you look for the thing that gets the name, you never find anything. Very famous, okay? If you take away the name, if you don't think of it as a pen, and then you don't think of it as a cylinder, and then you don't think of it as white, and then you don't think of it as long, and then you don't think of it as half of being long, and you keep going down. It's the onion skin theory of Majjhimika, okay? Really, each time you focus on the next level, you are again projecting. Okay, and if you keep that up, you'll never find anything. Does that mean that you should go around in a daze and think that nothing exists? Go stand in front of a cab and let us know. You know, send a postcard from the hospital. Tell us if there's a delusion. You know, the bill and your broken legs. You know what I mean? Okay. No, you shouldn't go around in a daze and think that nothing exists. It's not the point. You should immediately start keeping an ethical way of life. If you understood what I'm saying, the immediate implication is, I better straighten out my karma pronto. You know, why? Because everything's empty. Okay? I mean, this is a real Majjhimika. Okay? It leads to, you know, this whole world of enlightened beings being good to each other. Okay? That's pretty cool. Alright. Okay, next question. When they said, nothing exists ultimately, but everything does exist nominally, there's another way to say that. You can divide the whole universe into two realities. Okay? It's called the two truths. I hate that. Anyway, truth means reality. Okay? Normally, truth means a statement or something like that. Like, it's a truth that my credit card's always overspent or something like that. Okay? That's just a truth. But think of it as reality. Okay, think of Denpa as reality. You don't have to translate it as two truths. It's two realities. Okay, it's two realities. In fact, there's a big debate about it in the monastic textbooks. They say it cannot mean truth. You know, technically the word is truth, but if you said that it meant truth, you'd be wrong. You cannot translate it as truth. Why? Say kunzo. Denpa. Kunzo. Denpa. Kunzo means fake. Kunzo means deceptive. Okay. Like sobzu in modern Tibetan means a person, a faker, like a person who's pretending to be a spiritual teacher and hasn't studied and cannot help you and is, you know, collecting your money or something like that. Sobzu. Same idea. It means a fake or someone who's not for real. Okay. So kunzo means fake or deceptive. Denpa means reality. Okay. And in the monastic textbooks they say, come on, you can't call it truth, because then what would this translate as? Fake truth? Come on. It doesn't mean truth, it means reality. Okay. Alright? They would say you can't translate it as truth. Now some people go and call it relative truth. There's no word in Tibetan for relative. There's nothing about this word that means relative. There's never been any word that meant relative. There is an idea about relativity in Buddhism that, you know, compared to a short thing, another thing is shorter, or compared to this thing, another thing is longer. That does exist. That concept is discussed in totally different contexts, in totally different books. Nothing to do with this. I don't know where they got relative truth from. Okay, you can junk it. Call it nominal reality, which is correct. Nominal meaning projectional. Nominal names meaning the names that you project onto things, meaning the reality, the penness you project onto pen. Okay? That's okay, you can say nominal reality. Tanye to yupa. We already had it. But kunzo is very clear. Kunzo yupa, kunzo denpa means fake reality, deceptive reality. Okay? Why? There's a state of mind that thinks this pen comes from its own side. But in fact, it doesn't. And so that pen is faking you out. Okay? That pen is deceiving you. Okay? And that's all. That reality which deceives you, that reality which fakes you out, is called kunzo denpa. Okay? So everything in the universe is either ultimate reality or the reality that fakes you out. The reality that deceives you. Okay? By the way, do Buddhas get deceived by pens? No. So there's a little bit more to the definition. That reality which deceives, a deceived state of mind. Okay? Okay? You gotta say that. Otherwise Buddhas couldn't see pens. Alright. So the real meaning of this, kunzo means, samvritti in Sanskrit, means it comes from, the reality was named from the state of mind that doesn't get it. Okay? Kunzo means the state of mind that is faked out. And so we call it the reality, which is the reality to the state of mind that gets faked out. That's the real meaning of deceptive reality. The word deceptive. So relative gets even worse. Okay? 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 Why? Well, what is the second kind of reality? Deceptive reality. Why do you call it deceptive? Because there's a mind which gets deceived. And the word deceptive refers to that state of mind, not to the reality. Okay? Kunzo refers to the mind which is faked out by that reality. Okay? That reality only exists with reference to a faked out state of mind. What is that state of mind? Well, how is it faked out? Well, the pen appears to exist from its own side, but in truth it doesn't. Okay? What's deception mean? When you say, he deceived me, he faked me out. There's two elements have to be there. What? Has to appear one way and has to be in reality something different. That's deception. You can only have deception if two elements are there. What? Looks one way, but really is a different way. Then you have deception. Okay. He deceived me. Why? Oh, he said he was a nice guy, and later I found out he wasn't. Okay, what? Appearance of nice guy and reality of not nice guy. Okay? He said he was trying to be my friend, but I found out he was after my money. Okay? Appearance, trying to be my friend. Reality, trying to get my money. Okay? That's deception. Deception requires that something appear one way and be a different way. Okay? What's the deception with regard to this pen? To a kundalini state of mind. What's the deception? Looks like it comes from its own side. Doesn't come from its own side. Who cares? What's that got to do with my happiness? Go to work. Meet a bad person. If they come from their own side, you're in trouble. You can't change them. Okay? What's the self-existent way to change a bad person at work? Go talk to them, discuss with them, try to reason with them, or shoot them if you get a chance. Okay? All right? What's the Buddhist way to change them? You clean up your act, and they'll change. Because it's all your projection. Very interesting. When you meet a person who has a particular irritating habit, the only way to remove it is to change yourself. Okay? And thinking any other way causes all your suffering. It's very interesting. If you have a person near you, like your husband or wife or whoever, who irritates you, and they're doing some certain thing that irritates you, like they speak lies all the time or something like that. Why is that happening? Because you lie. Okay? So what's a self-existent way to change them? Go talk to them. Please, honey, don't lie anymore. You drive me crazy with these lies. Okay? Get angry at them. Yell at them. Okay? What's the Madhyamika way to change them? Strictly avoid lying. And purify your old bad karma, you know? Purify the old ones. What's the best way to purify your old lies? Stop lying completely, even about small things. Okay? And then they just change. You say, I can't believe it. My wife hasn't lied for 6 weeks, you know? Nobody really knew, you know? Okay? That's the Buddhist way to change your whole world. Last question. What's the natural reaction to someone who lies? I mean, or someone who yells at you? You yell back. You see what I mean? Yeah, to a kundalini state of mind. You see, you yell back. That's exactly the worst thing to do. It's exactly how to make them stay in your life. It's really weird. I repeat, if anyone around you is showing some kind of behavior that you don't like, examine it and then remove it strictly from your own life. And they will change. And that's the only way to change them. It's very cool. If you kept this up over a long period of time, you'd be a tantric devi. And you'd be stuck in Vajrayogini's paradise. Okay? You'd be forced to be seen. You know, twist my arm.
Does the Buddha mind still project?
He says, does the Buddha mind still project? Yeah, sure. No problem. But they're going around saying, oh, look, Buddha paradise, body of light, omniscient mind. Yeah, that's a cool projection. I think I'll keep that up. Okay? I mean, they understand it's an illusion in a way, and they like it. They say, okay, let's keep doing it. Huh? How about the pen what?
Yeah, I mean,
oh, they would see this as every detail of the pen would create total ecstasy in them. I mean, they would touch it and get ecstasy. They would look at it and get ecstasy. If they had got blue ink on their finger, it would cause them ecstasy. Everything causes them ecstasy.
Did they see suffering?
Do they see suffering? Very difficult question. He keeps asking me this question. Now he's done it in public. It's really bad. I'll give you the standard answer, and I believe there's a higher answer. Okay. But I'll give you the standard answer. They perceive how you suffer. They perceive you perceiving suffering, but they don't perceive it the same way. Like they can see, they can perceive that you are perceiving this as something harmful, for example, but they don't perceive it that way. Okay, I mean that's the standard answer. How's that? Okay. They perceive that you perceive it that way, but they don't have any personal experience of suffering. Okay, because they can't. Okay, but they can perceive that you're perceiving that. Okay. Does that hurt them? No. Does it make them sad? Yes. Is that a kind of suffering? No. It's a kind of compassion and it feels good. Okay? All right? That's a standard answer. Yeah? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that's a sweet feeling. It's a sort of a sweet, sad feeling. How's that? Okay? All right. So that's Kunzo Demba and Dundam Demba. Yeah?
If you take an object and you remove everything that they would have been,
You're correct, yeah. He said, let me repeat it for the microphone, okay? He said, it seems to me that even in the mind-only school, if you took away the kuntak, right, which is sort of like the projection, then still there'd be some reality out there of a pen, right? And they would say, I think they would say, I think generally the mind-only school, remember we said that there's the real pen, then there's this veil over the pen, which is your kuntak of it, and then there's the mind perceiving the pen, and sometimes you get to the real pen, but you never really, most of the time you don't, and you're perceiving the vision of the pen or something like that. Yeah.
They would also say that that is a product of your own karma.
They would say that. He said, if you stripped away the kuntas and just had the real pen out there, the Shenwang pen, by itself, and you're perceiving it, is that a result of your karma? They'd say yes.
So, if you get to a point that's very close.
Oh, the sweet thing about, he says it's getting very close. The sweet thing about mind only and Madhyamika is that they are so close. And we're going to get, later on tonight, we're going to get real close. Okay. And it makes you aware that mind only was an artifice of Lord Buddha to push you up to Madhyamika. You can start to get a real feeling of how he's lifting you up. And you're just a little ways to go and you slipped into Madhyamika. See, I mean, he invented it to get you really close to Madhyamika. And it is. Yeah. So he said the main difference is how karma works, or how the process of karma works. Yeah, that's true. That's partly true. There are like eight classic differences between the Madhyamika Prasangika and the others, and you should study them sometime. It's one of them. It's similar. Yeah. Okay. We're going to get to that tonight. We're going to get to just that tonight. In fact, we'll probably do it. I don't know, they always put Subhuti or that Bodhisattva out there to ask a question to get us to the next subject. Okay? So that's the difference between ultimate reality and relative? Nah. Deceptive reality, fake reality. Okay? According to the middle way school. Okay. How do you think? And if you get the right answer, you get refreshments, okay? How do you think the mind-only score would say the difference between ultimate reality and deceptive reality is? It's pretty easy, actually. Think of the three categories. Yeah. Let's say kuntaks are deceptive reality, okay? Because they don't really exist. They're just made up in your mind, okay? They don't have an existence from their own side or their own identity. They are constructs. And the other two are ultimate reality, okay? Because they're not just made up in your mind, okay? This pen is come on, pens is a pen, you know? So they really divided along lines of what? Existing by definition. So it's pretty simple in their school, okay?
Shenwang is part of that, right?
That's what yeah, Shenwangs exist by definition, and so does emptiness. And those, and you know, you believe that. You know, you can say, you know, when I'm having some kind of bad day and I just make up something in my mind, I understand that that doesn't have reality. But my boss is there. He's a bad guy. I mean, he has some ultimate reality. It's not, I'm just not making that up, okay? Three people in the office agree with me. That confirms it. You see, I mean, you believe that. Especially when you get confirmation from somebody else in the office. And those who don't agree with you, something wrong with them. Okay? They didn't have a tema yet. They didn't have a pramana about your boss. Okay? They didn't have a correct perception yet about your boss. But they will. As soon as you've created enough gossip and rumors in the office, you know, they'll come to believe you. Okay? So in their school it's pretty simple. That's the difference. Okay? There was one from Mr. Middleway. Okay, it's Miss Middleway. Okay, another question for you. Let me see if I get this straight. So you say nothing exists at all, right?
No.
You think something does exist?
Yeah, something exists nominally.
Oh, nominally. I see, I see. And established to what state of mind? To the direct perception of emptiness by an Arya or everyone else's kind of perception. Nominal things. I mean, do you have to be an Arya to brush your teeth?
No.
Okay, so what state of mind is it, pray tell, Ms. Madhyamika, who is, which is perceiving everything else? Is it a Dundam state of mind or a Kunzo state of mind? It's Kunzo, right? Deceived state of mind, right? Deceived state of mind, right? Now, does what it perceives exist ultimately, as we say it does? When you're looking at your toothbrush, does it exist ultimately like us mind-only school people say it does? And is that state of mind correct or mistaken? Is it deceived or correct?
The mind that realizes that it doesn't exist ultimately.
I didn't say that. Let's go back. Okay. You perceive your toothbrush. Looking at your toothbrush. Okay. And what state of mind established the existence of this toothbrush? Yeah, Kunzo. Which it means in English what, pray tell? Venerable sir? Sedandema? A deceived state of mind. Okay, a deceived state of mind. And that state of mind thinks what about this toothbrush?
That it
doesn't exist.
That it doesn't.
Oh, does it believe that does that state of mind believe this toothbrush exists? Does that state of mind believe that this toothbrush exists?
Yes.
Is it deceived?
Yes.
Ha! So you guys think nothing exists. Finally I cornered you. Finally you admitted it. Finally you nihilist. Now I'll go home, you know. Middle-aged people, get out of here, you know. Okay? We'll go through it again.
Don't worry, we don't exist anyway.
Is this toothbrush's existence established by your deceased state of mind? So if that's a wrong state of mind, then this toothbrush doesn't exist, right?
Existence as existing from its own side.
Come on! I just caught you! You finally admitted it! You know, Nagarjuna, all you guys are nihilists. You know? You think nothing exists. You probably deny karma, too. You know? No, that's where they go from there. And they say, you probably say that there's no morality. You probably say you don't have to keep my book anymore. You know? Why? Because the state of mind that establishes the existence of a toothbrush is deceived. And it thinks the toothbrush exists. And since it's wrong, well then, that toothbrush doesn't exist. And neither does karma or morality. We can do what we want now. Okay? You didn't say all that. I didn't ask you, did the Kunzo state of mind think that the toothbrush was self-existent or not? I didn't ask you that. I don't care. You guys are crazy already. Just get down to the basics. Does the Kunzo state of mind, does the deceased state of mind think that this toothbrush exists? And is it mistaken? Is it a mistaken state of mind? Yeah. So then the toothbrush doesn't exist. You guys admitted it. Finally. You finally admitted it.
Same way that you
don't
exist.
By the way, this is what the mind school is like, telling himself, mind only is like saying, we finally did it. You know, by the end of this section, they're like, we finally proved you guys wrong. Okay. What's middle way going to come back and say? Very simple. Very simply. How is that state of mind mistaken? Why do we call it mistaken?
Because it thinks it exists on their own side.
Yeah, it's only mistaken about that angle.
About how it relates to that.
About whether it exists by definition or not. About whether it exists as a projection or not. It's only mistaken about that. It's not mistaken about is it white, is it blue, is it a pen, is it a toothbrush, okay? When we say mistaken state of mind, we're only talking about from one angle, which is what? Mistaken about its ultimate nature. Okay? Mistaken about that. Come on. Okay? We never said mistaken about everything. All right? Of course there's a toothbrush there. That's why, you know, my teeth aren't that yellow. You know? Okay? It does something. All right? Okay? But by the way, the mind only chooses to stop the argument 3 minutes ago. We finally got you, you know. You do agree that everything doesn't exist, because you say the state of mind that thinks that those things exist is mistaken. And then you can say, what? Okay, it ain't necessarily so. Okay, just because that state of mind is mistaken with regard to one aspect doesn't mean it's mistaken about the very existence of the toothbrush. Come on. Yeah. You're asking me as I'll be a mind-only person. Is it Kundak or Shenlong? Since it's a state of mind, it's a Shenlong. It's an existing state of mind. Yeah, all mental things are Shenlongs, changing object, dependent object. It has constructs in it. It makes constructs, but it itself is not a construct. You stupid middle-way people would say that everything's a construct. You know, we don't say that. It has its own true existence from its own side. Because it has its causes. Yeah. Ignorant state of mind, correct state of mind, wrong state of mind, correct state of mind, doesn't matter. State of mind is a changing thing. Okay, it's a functional thing. It's a Shenlong. Okay. Now, next question. They dig out some books, you know. Somebody digs out some books said to be by Arya Sangha. It's called The Great Commentary to the Sutra, in which the Buddha explains his other sutras, okay? And Jetsun Kapa says, come on, that's not by Arya Sangha. You know, because they want to show that they're trying to prove their case with some more stuff, you know. They're trying to say some weird things about the mind-only school that the mind-only school never said. And he says, come on, that book wasn't even written by Arya Sangha. And they say, prove it. And he says, didn't you notice he quotes Dharmakirti? Okay? Dharmakirti is like 300 years later. Okay? You say, get it? You know, first of all, this so-called commentary supposed to be by Asanga, doesn't, Arya Sangha, it mentions Dharmakirti, who was to come 300 years later. Secondly, why did he have to write a big fat commentary when he covered everything already in his other commentaries? You know, he covers every single chapter, except the chapter in which they set the scene. You know, Buddha was sitting with 500 monks, and then he said, okay, he doesn't talk about that chapter, okay, but the rest he talks about in detail. Why does he have to go and sweat and write another commentary? So I don't even believe that commentary is written by him. And moreover, in that commentary, it says that mind-only school do believe in external objects. Okay. In that commentary, it says that the mind-only school does believe in the existence of external objects. Then, since it's so popular in the West to say that the big thing about the mind-only school is that this pen is part of my mind. Okay, that's what mind-only school means. We asked Geshe Thubten Rinchen to clarify that point, and he was like excited because he says so many people, even in Tibet, got it wrong about what it means to exist externally. You know, does mind only mean that this pen is part of your mind, you know? That he purposely went into this long, beautiful explanation about what do they mean in the mind-only school when they say this pen doesn't exist externally, as an external object, okay? And we're going to cover that after refreshments, okay? Because it's beautiful. It's very beautiful. And I think, you know, by the way, this is our last night on the mind-only school, because then we go to the lower Madhyamika in class 9, and then so that we end the 7-year suffering on a good note, we go to Prasangika, highest Madhyamika, okay? So we're going to wrap it up by explaining what the mind-only school doesn't believe, and why all those Western scholars are crazy when they say certain things about the mind-only school. Okay, and then we'll back it up with scripture and everything else. Okay, after, have a nice external existing cookie. And, Come back. Okay. Here we go. Does that plug exist as an external object? Okay, four great schools of Buddhism, ancient Indian Buddhism, okay? By the way, don't confuse them with the Tibetan schools. I get people, they go home and they tell their friends, Michael Roach criticizes all the other schools. And these schools finished about, you know, 1,000 years ago, okay? So I figure it's safe now. Okay. These are not the Kagyu, Sakya, and Nyingma, okay? These are, we're talking the four great schools of ancient India, okay? What do they say about external objects? This is the way Geshe Thupten Rinchen explained it. Very beautiful explanation. By the way, nothing I say in these classes is my own, you know, it's all from the pure holy lamas that I taught, that I learned from, okay? So 99% of all this 7 years has come from Ken Rinpoche Geshe Losan Tarchin, and every time you get a chance, you should thank him, because without him, you wouldn't have one word of this stuff. And then, you know, this tiny part at the end came from Geshe Thupten Rinchen, okay, who is also incredible, more than incredible. Okay, so here we go. Four schools. What's the first one? You can call it Vaibhashika. I like, you know, easy way you can call it the Abhidharma schools, okay? So I don't mind if you say Abhidharma. In English, you can say detailists. Why are they called detailists? Because they follow an ancient book called The Detailed Explanation. And that's all. Detailists. You can think of them as the Abhidharma schools. Okay. Hinayana or Mahayana? Hinayana because they explain emptiness in a certain way. Not because they come from Burma or Thailand. And if you come from Thailand, you may be Mahayana or Hinayana, according to this way of looking at it. It's just, how do they think about emptiness? Okay. Next school. We call them the sutrists, okay? The sutrist school. In Sanskrit, the Sautrantika. Not to be mixed up with the Svatantrika, which come later. Okay, anyway, if you put sutrist on your homework, that's fine. Okay? Why are they called sutrists? They love to quote sutra. Okay? To them, sutra is everything. All right? Certain sutras. Okay? All right. Hinayana or Mahayana? Hinayana. Okay, again, in their viewpoint about emptiness mainly. Okay, not that they don't have compassion or something like that. Of course they do. Okay. Next, sorry?
Is that also called the logic school?
Yeah, I call them sometimes the logic schools. And sometimes I call them the perception theory schools. Okay, because that's their big deal, logic and perceptual theory. Okay. That's the first two. Now we split. Now the second two are Mahayana. Okay, what's number three? Mind only. Mind only, also called Nelnjar Chöpa, meaning Yogacara. Okay, so Yogacara means followers of deep practice or something like that. Those who follow deep practice. You can call them mind only or deep practice school. Okay, Nelnjar Chöpa. Mind only is Chittamatra, and Nelnjar Chöpa means those who practice deep meditation or something like that. Deep practice. Deep practice school. You can call them either thing. Okay. School number three can either be called mind-only school or deep practice school. How's that? Which incorporates the word yoga. Yogacara. Okay. Yogacara. Okay. Okay. So Yogacara and Chittamatra mean the same thing. Deep practice or mind-only school, same thing. Okay. Last school is Madhyamika, middle way school. Which of the schools believes that external things exist, and which schools say they don't? Okay. The first two schools, the two lower ones, they say exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing. External objects do exist. Okay. They say exactly the same thing. And the way they describe the existence of external objects is exactly the same. Okay. And we're going to get into it. All right. Now, interestingly, part of school number four, meaning the middle way school, you can split the middle way school into two parts. The upper part is called Prasangika. Prasangika is actually a kind of logical statement called a telngyur. And telngyur means, you know, if somebody there says, every fruit is red, You know? So I, you know, go ahead, say every fruit is red. Yeah. So I say, also I guess oranges are red too, huh? That's a telangir. That's a prasangika. Prasangika is a like a sarcastic statement. Okay. Telangir in Tibetan, prasangika in Sanskrit. And the upper half of the Madhyamika school is called prasangika because they like to use them. They think that another person can gain a correct understanding of emptiness solely through a sarcastic reply like that. You know? Okay? That's why they're called prasangika. Oh, so I guess a dog would see it as a pen? You see, and from that, they believe that a person can get an understanding of emptiness. Just from that. I don't have to say, look, it's empty, I can prove it. You know, he says, okay, just say, oh, you say, does this pen come from its own side, okay? I think the pen comes from its own side. So I don't argue emptiness with you, blah, 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 blah. I just say, oh, so I guess a dog would see it as a pen also, right? And that's a telangir. That's a prasangika. And they believe that prasangikas, that logical method called an absurd consequence, would give you an understanding of emptiness. So they're called consequence school. I like to call them consequence school. Okay. The lower half of Madhyamika is called the Rangyupa in Tibetan, and that means independent school. Okay, independent. Why are they called independent school? They believe in a kind of reasoning that has some kind of independent existence or independent effectiveness that the higher Madhyamika school doesn't believe. So it's how they view the process of logic as somehow being independently functional or something like that. Okay, it's a long story and I don't want to go into it. Okay, so how many schools you got? Now you got two inside of the Madhyamika school. Lower Madhyamika being the independent school. Higher Madhyamika being the consequence school. Which one is Nagarjuna? Consequence. Okay. Which one is Jatankaba? Which one is Arya Sangha? Consequence in mind-only sheep's clothing. Okay. All right. Got it? Prasabandhu? Consequence in... he's not even in Vaibhashika clothing. He admits he doesn't believe in the Bible. At the end of the Abhidharma Koshi, he says, hey, I'm just reporting what they say, okay? All right? So all these guys, you know, if you see emptiness, you're automatically prasangika anyway, okay? If you understand emptiness, you're already Madhyamika, prasangika, okay? Like that, in its correct version, okay? So the upper half of the Madhyamika school also says external objects exist. That's kind of weird. You got the two lowest schools and the highest half of the highest school agreeing on something. What am I going to say next? But in a totally different way. Okay? Alright, got that? Okay, if you ask some guy from the Abhidharma schools, you know, Vaibhashika, detailist, do you believe this thing exists as an external object? They say, of course. If you ask a sutras guy, does this exist as an external object? They say, sure. I agree with exactly what he says. And then you go to a Madhyamika prasangika and you say, does this exist as an external object? They say, sure it does. Well, do you agree with them? Oh, no way. What they mean when they say external and what I mean when I say external, completely different things. Come on. You think I'd agree with those guys? All right? So we got to find out what's the difference between those two. Now we got how many schools left?
Yeah. One and a half.
One and a half. Good answer. Okay? One and a half. Let's go to the mind-only school. If you say, does this exist as an external object, would they say yes or no?
No.
Mind-only. No, they'd say, no way. Okay, that's not an external object. Does that mean that they believe this pen is somehow part of my mind? And is that why they're called mind-only? Not at all. And we're going to talk about it later today. We're going to talk about it later, okay? And 99% of the people who hear the word mind-only and 100% of the people who hear that mind-only school doesn't accept external objects believes the totally wrong. They think they don't believe this thing exists outside of me or that it's part of my mind, okay? And that's not what they believe at all, okay? And this is what's cool about this clarification. This is the last thing you're ever going to learn about the mind-only school. It's kind of cool. By the way, you've covered most of the major points of the mind-only school. Okay? You've covered in the diamond cutter you had... Kunchi, Alaya Vijnana. And so you had a good presentation on that. Okay. Anyway, We still got half a school left. Who's that?
Independence,
which is the lower half of the middle way school. Okay? You can split them into two. Okay? There's a Nelzor Chupe Umarangyupa and the Dode Chupe Umarangyupa. Okay? And it was on the transparency, and whoever didn't bring a bowl tonight saved you 15 minutes because they're really long names. Okay? So, Thomas, you can't mark them wrong. Okay? But you can mark them extra wrong on something else. Okay? Alright. So you can split the independents into two parts. Those who kind of lean towards the sutrists and those who kind of lean toward the mind only. Okay? Those who kind of lean towards school number two and those who kind of lean towards school number three. Now, what do you think the guys that kind of lean towards the school number two say about external object?
That they do exist.
That they do exist. Okay? Because that's what school number two thinks. Okay? So the part of the independent school, which is called those who lean towards the sutras, say that external objects
do exist.
Okay? Would you guess that they think that they exist in the same way?
No.
No, because they're much smarter, right? Careful, this is a lower Madhyamika school. Okay? And how about, by the way, when I talk normally about Madhyamika school, I'm usually talking about Prasangika. Okay, when I normally say Madhyamika, in these arguments, we've been speaking mostly from the point of view of Prasangika. Yeah.
So when you say which school, and sometimes I say Mahayana, and then it's Madhyamika, and you say Madhyamika, what should we really be answering?
Middle way is okay.
So
Madhyamika is okay.
Mahayana
means mind only and Mahayana. I mean, middle way.
Madhyamika
is to say Mahayana is a dangerous answer, because you're covering mind only and middle way.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because not all Mahayanas are middle way. There's mind-only. That's a long story. Okay. What do you think the independent school inside the middle way school, those guys who are leaning towards the mind-only school, say about external object?
Don't exist.
Okay. So in essence, we have 1 1/4 schools say. Huh? That they don't exist, and you have 2 3/4 schools saying they do exist. Okay? No problem, right? I'm setting you up for that, okay? So no problem. Now what do we have to do? Where do we have to go from here? Huh? Yeah, figure out what they all mean when they say it does or it doesn't exist as an external object, okay? Lower two schools say that a thing, this is Abhidharma and Sutrist, okay? Detailist and Sutrist. They say something exists as an external object if it's made of partless atomic particles. Atomic particles which are so small that they cannot be divided further. They're so small. This is the first two schools say that external objects do exist, and the test of an external object is anything which consists of atomic particles, the basic building blocks of all matter. Okay? Physical objects which exist, which are composites, or which are big bunches of atomic particles. And those atomic particles are so small that they don't have a left and a right side. They don't have any width. All right, they're so small that they're called chamepa. Duten chamepa. Duten means atomic particle. What do they call an atomic bomb in modern Tibetan? Dutengi boom. Okay, Dutengi boom. Okay, and Duten means an atom, and then chame means partless, meaning there's no size. You couldn't divide it further. And when you think of it, it's totally infinitely small. Like, even in your mind, if you tried to picture it, it wouldn't have a left and a right side. And how long would it last? You see, it would be like infinitely short in duration also. So it's like this idea that there is. By the way, get this. and I'm not, this is not what I'm teaching tonight, but the Abhidharma school says this is ultimate reality. Ultimate reality. Yeah, that's ultimate. You know, something that even mentally you could no longer divide further. So that kind of, that's their idea. Now this thing really exists. You know, this is the stuff that all, that everything in the universe is made of. You know, sound familiar? You know, that's how we have to manipulate our universe. Go down to those molecules, ship them around, make new chemicals. This will solve problems of humanity. You know what I mean? Okay, I mean, their idea is like, if you could like manipulate these smallest particles in the right way, everything would be all right. And that's real. If something had those particles, that's real. You can touch it, you can smell it, you can break it. You know, that's reality. Okay, sound familiar? All right. But I mean, in Buddhism, that's considered the dumbest system. Okay. I mean, forget projection or karma or you know, something's real when I can break it, chew it, touch it. You know, it has particles. Okay, atoms. Okay. Now, it's very interesting. What's the next school up? Yeah, mind-only school. And what do they say? External objects don't exist. All they mean is this. I wish to God somebody would have put it in the word, right? They don't exist the way those other two guys think. Simple? Okay. Does that mean the mind-only school thinks that this pen is part of your head? Nothing to do with that, okay? Now you can quiz your friends, your Buddhist friends. Does mind-only school think external objects exist? No. Well, so they think it's mind. Everything's mind, right? And they'll say yes, and you'll say, no, stupid. Abhidharma and Sutras and Detailists think that stuff is made of tiny particles that have no parts. And all the mind-only school is saying, get it? There's no such thing. How could you have a particle that had no sides? I mean, how could you have a physical thing that didn't have a left side and a right side? That's all. They just reject the idea of a partless atom. And therefore they say, your idea of what an external object is doesn't exist, so external objects, as defined by those two lower schools, don't exist. And I wish they would have put that in the mind-only school description, right? So does the mind-only school say that external objects don't exist? Yeah. What do they mean? External objects don't exist the way those other two guys thought. You know, that's all. That's all. Okay? Now you can impress your friends at Yaffa coffee shop in the morning. What does school number, first quarter of number four think? Who do they side with? They side with the sutras, but when we say side with, we're kind of saying they're a little bit different, right? What they say is, we don't agree with your idea that external objects means a physical thing without, you know, that's made of atoms that don't have parts. Why don't you say a physical thing that's made of atoms that don't have any identifiable parts? I mean, they're so small that we can't identify left and right. See, there's a big difference there. They're saying they do have width. They do have size. They're just so small you can't tell they have size. That's a big difference. Is that easier to accept? That's more of Western scientists, I think. I mean, if you went up to Western scientists and said, do the tiniest particles that have a weeny width, measurable nanosecond width, they say, yeah, they have some width, you know. They have some kind of stuff like that. And that's about the viewpoint of the sutras-leaning independent part of the middleway schools. Got it? Okay? I'll say it again. You can divide the middleway into two schools. Sorry, let's call it two groups. And the lower group is called independent. And the lower part of the lower group, which is called those guys who are leaning towards the sutras, which is school number two, say, we kind of agree with the sutras. Yeah, external object means any physical thing that's made of atoms. But we don't call them partless atoms. We're not that stupid. Okay? We think they're atoms that don't have any size that you could recognize or discern, but they are there. Okay? That's all. What do you think mind-only school would say to these guys?
My own wish.
They also say, no, we don't accept that. Okay? They also say we don't accept that.
But then you do think they exist.
Oh, by the way, do you think mind-only school has a problem with the idea that, things are made of basic building blocks of atoms?
No.
They don't have a problem with that. Okay? They just say that's not the ultimate thing. Okay? That's all. Right? Now we go to school number... What do you think the mind-only leaning school would say, the independents who are leaning towards the mind-only? They say external objects don't exist, right. And they're about saying the same thing as the mind-only school, okay? Now we go to the Prasangika. Not much difference there. Not much difference there. Okay? They don't have a big difference. They disagree about what it is to be self-existent or something like that. They disagree about what it means to be emptiness or something like that. But they don't have a big problem with the way they describe external objects. Okay? Now how about Prasangika? That's what we really want to know. What did they say? External objects do or don't exist? Do exist. Now they do exist. How do they define an external object? Okay? Obviously not as a thing that doesn't have any sides or something like that. It's very simple. They say, hey, if it's outside of you, it's an external object. Okay? Right? They don't get too complicated about it. Okay? Is this pen an external object? Yes. Why? Because it's beyond the edge of my of what we call Gyuki Duba. Gyuki Duba is a special expression. It's a little tricky. And it means part of my being, okay? Part of my immediate being. Is it subsumed by my consciousness? No. Why? If you stick a pin in this pen, I don't go, ouch, okay? So it's external. That's all. That's all. Prove that external objects exist. Hey, there's stuff out there and it's not part of me. That's all, okay? Then I'm getting more complicated than that, okay? So they obviously don't mean the same thing that the lower two schools mean when they say external objects exist. Okay? Got it. Geshe Thupten Rinpoche was careful to say that, last point, okay, we is talking about physical matter. Okay? How about empty space? How about emptiness itself? Is it subsumed by your being? Do you say ouch when they poke your empty space? No. Is space an external object? No. We're talking physical stuff, okay? Don't forget that. He was careful at the end of the explanation. He said, by the way, we're not talking about anything that's external to yourself. We're talking about chairs, trees, pillars, schools, you know, cupcakes.
It's for the whole explanation?
Yeah, for the whole. Basically for the whole explanation. Okay. Basically, we're still talking about the object of the senses, basically. Subjati rovrecha. Physical matter. Excuse me? Not a debate about whether they exist outside of you or not. The question is, that's all. They're just talking about physical stuff that's either outside of you or inside of you. Okay, that's all. Okay. Last question. Why then do they call them the mind-only school? Okay. Why then do they call them the mind-only school? And there's a beautiful explanation in Jetsun Kappa. By the way, the mind-only school says, we take our name from the sutra on the 10th bodhisattva level. There's a sutra called Satchubeddo. Satchubeddo. The sutra of the 10th bodhisattva level. And in that sutra it says, all the three realms are nothing more than mind. Sem-tham. Chittamatra. Okay? The three realms, meaning the whole world, is just mind, is mind only. Okay? That's what the sutra says. Is mind only. Then in Gombo Rabsa, which is Jetsun Kappa's incredible explanation of emptiness, which we'll do after the three-year retreat or something, okay? Word by word. That'd be nice. I'm not... kind of. Okay. Yeah, let's do that. Anyway, he says it doesn't mean mind only. Okay, it doesn't mean that. And then he goes in, he quotes a lot of other scriptures. They are talking about, now they're talking about a scripture that says, who do you think made the golden palaces in Vajrayani's paradise? And who do you think made the hell realms, you know, all those machines that they used to squash you? You know, did they have to hire a construction company to go build these things? You know, do you really, did you ever think about it? You know? Did they hire a construction company, you know, way back when, to go down to hell and make all this stuff? You know, it's kind of hot. You probably got extra pay. You know what I mean? Okay? Say, no, of course not. These are constructs of your mind. They are created by your mind. Okay? And what does that mean? It means that you created karma by being ignorant, you've hurt other people, or you helped other people, and now you're forced to see these things. That's all. And that's what we mean by mind only. So they should have said, mainly mind only. Or mind is the main thing. Only mind is the main thing. How's that? And Jetsun Kapa says, I wish they would have called this school only mind is the main thing school. Okay? He says, because even the Tibetans got confused. A lot of Tibetan lamas, a lot of Tibetans throughout history said, oh, they believe this pen is your mind. Something like that. Okay? They don't. They don't believe that. Okay? They should have been called the mainly mind-only school. Or mind-only is the main thing. What's the thing they're denying when they say mind-only is the main thing? There's a couple of things. First, physical causes are not the main causes. Okay? If you talk about what made New York City, it's not the asphalt and the concrete and everything else. What mainly made New York City is only mental things. You see, and that's what mind only means. Okay? What mainly created New York City is only mind. Okay? The main thing is only mind. Meaning, physical things help out, but they're not the main thing. The main thing is mind. Only. Alone. And the word alone is meant to reject physical things. You see what I mean? As not being the main cause. But of course they contribute. Okay? That's one part. Also the word only in mind only was meant to reject the idea that this world was created by some kind of person. As a creator. Okay? You know, that had nothing to do on 6 days a week. And created this world. They said, come on, mind only. Meaning, mind mainly only. Okay? Mainly mind only. Meaning, forget this idea of some dude with a long white beard who slaps together the world in 6 days. Okay? We don't believe that. Okay? It's the mind. It's a process of collecting karma and then projecting a world. Okay? Even the sun coming up and down is a projection. Okay, of your past karma. Last thing. What does the mind school, mind only school mean when they say, what is it? What's that expression? Everything is of the same stuff. They say, Zechik. Zechik. Suktan Zingi Sema Zechik. Say, Sukdang. You're lucky. All the long Tibetan has been destroyed. Sukdang. Sungjin. Kitsema. Zechik. Say, Sukdang. Sukjingi. Tema. Zechik. My tongue. And my tongue consciousness. My awareness of what I'm tasting. And this tea. Okay? Suk meaning physical matter. Sungjingi tema meaning the pramana or the correct perception of that physical matter, which grasps or holds on to that physical matter. Okay? My tongue consciousness and this tea. Zechik. What does zechik mean? Are the same stuff. Now you should be objecting. Oh, then they say it's mine only. They must be saying that the tea is mine only. We don't have to worry about, you know, disposing of styrofoam. It's just mine. Okay? Because the mind-only school, their main idea is that my taste buds and my awareness of how it tastes and the thing I'm tasting are zechik, are the same stuff. Okay? Now, how do you answer that? What does zechik mean? Who said that? Yeah, they come from the same karmic seed, and that's all it means. Same stuff means comes from the same stuff. That's all. So now you've got three parts of the mind-only school that we should rewrite while we're thinking about it, okay? What? First, we shouldn't call them the mind-only school. We should call them the Mainly mind-only school. Okay. Mainly mind-alone school or something like that. As opposed to physical causes or some God who made the world. Okay. Then what are we going to... What is the other one? No. There was another one.
Reject the
identity. No, we had mind only, and then there was another one before that. Huh?
Yes.
No, all before that. Huh?
Physical matter.
Oh, external object. Sorry. Okay, let's rewrite this one. Mind only school doesn't accept the existence of external objects. The way the lower two schools do. How's that? Okay, we're going to rewrite that one. Okay? From now on, when any ACI student goes up to somebody in New York City, which I'm sure you do frequently, and say, hey, did you know that external objects don't exist? Now you have to say, or the mind-only school says that external objects don't exist. You're going to say, the mind-only school doesn't say that external objects exist in the way that the lower two stupid schools think so. And that quarter, maybe they can throw in the quarter of the Madhyamika or something like that. Okay? Okay? So we fixed two already. Now what's the third one we have to fix? My awareness of the tea and the tea itself consist of the same stuff. Meaning they come from one karmic seed. Not meaning that they are made of the same mental stuff or something like that. Okay? That's all. So now we've clarified the mind-only school. They don't believe that external objects don't exist. Meaning this cup doesn't exist out there. Of course it exists out there. It's out. If you stick a pin in it, I don't go out. It's an external object, okay? All they're saying is that it doesn't exist as an external object that's made of these atoms that don't have any size. Because come on, such a thing is impossible, okay? And then when they say, what was the second one? Oh yeah, I'm the mind-only school. But all that means is that I think mind is the main thing that creates the world, or something like that, okay? And only mind and not other things, okay? And then in the third case, they're going to say, me and the cup are of the experiencer and the experiencer of the same stuff, but only meaning that we've come from the same karmic event. Whatever brought me to stand here with this cup in my hand also brought the cup here. Whatever action I did in the past to be standing here with the cup in my hand has also brought the cup to be in my hand, so I can experience it. Okay, same stuff in that sense. Yeah. No, not like that. Not so much that. We don't say cups have karma, they can't experience anything. Okay, yeah?
Do these divisions go across all the sects?
You mean the Tibetan sects?
Yeah, all the different.
Or the four ancient Indian schools? Okay.
Tibetan.
Oh, Bill asked, how do the four Tibetan schools you've been talking about the four schools of ancient India. How do the four Tibetan schools explain these things? They all accept the Kangyur and Tengyur. All four Tibetan schools accept that the word of the Buddha and the early Indian commentaries are all correct, and they accept all of them. There are some details of the presentation of Jetsongkhapa that other schools don't agree with and don't accept. And for example, we've had some of them in this class. The idea that emptiness could be a positive thing, like some kind of light or something like that, that's the meaning of emptiness. There's a school that says that emptiness consists of the opposite of everything that's not emptiness. Okay? And that's just, I mean, every Tibetan school, every Buddhist school says that that's how you perceive things, by canceling everything something is not, but that's not emptiness, come on. Okay? And other, we've had a Tibetan school that said all three turnings of the wheel are literal. And that the Buddha meant it when he said you had a self nature. And that when he said you had a Buddha nature, it means that there's a Buddha inside of you and you just have to rub off the top like the lottery things. And no, and you'll get to it. And there are schools that adamantly say that. And they have very persuasive proofs, very persuasive arguments. They're not stupid. And maybe they are enlightened beings. Presenting an idea to make it easier for students who can't get a slightly more sophisticated idea. But who would do that? Okay? So no problem. Recognize the incorrectness of their arguments, but be careful not to judge them. Okay? In which case you'd have to say Lord Buddha was a dumbhead because he said this mind-only school stuff. Okay? Be very careful not to judge them, or be very careful not to say they don't know anything or something like that. It may very well be that they are enlightened beings, probably they are, who are making a certain presentation because certain people respond well to that presentation and it helps them get higher. And that's fine. And so be very careful not to criticize them or judge them or something like that. But debate the hell out of them in public. Okay? Because then you thrash out the real meaning. Okay? And there's no problem with that. Buddha wasn't embarrassed to have the Bodhisattva ask him questions. Okay? Yeah. So he said, if the mind-only school, regarding how we understand the word mind-only when we say mind-only school, why did Master Shantideva say, why did he refute the idea that a sword could cut itself? He's refuting the concept of apperception, or the mind perceiving the mind in one moment. Okay? That the mind could be the object of the mind and the subject which is perceiving that at the same moment. For example, when you hear your thoughts, what's going on according to the other Buddhist schools? Some Buddhist schools say your mind is thinking and hearing the thoughts at the same time. The other Buddhist schools say you're always a millisecond behind. That thought has occurred and now your awareness of it is arising. And that happens a millisecond later. Okay? And it's not that it's happening at the same instant. And that's what he meant. And it's one of the I said there were eight unique features of the higher half of the Majjhimika school. One of them is that they don't accept the idea that the mind can perceive itself in one moment. So when you hear your thoughts, you're actually hearing something that occurred a millisecond ago. It's like the light from stars left those stars a year ago or something, and it's only now they could be gone now for all we know, right? Or 100 years or whatever, I don't know. Yeah, millions of years, okay? And it's the same idea, okay? That's all. They debate that. And the debate has a very deep meaning, not only for perceptual theory, but for emptiness. And you can study ACI course number 12 if you want to know more about it, because we went through it over and over again. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no contradiction, because the principal cause and condition is your mind. Okay? No problem. Yeah, one last question. Here we go. Which three ideas? Oh, you mean ways that we're rewriting those? Yeah, no, they only refer to the mind-only school. Now, are they accepted by the middle-way school? It's a whole big question, you know. Does the middle way school, for example, have a problem with saying that you and my eye, which is perceiving you, have come from the same karma? No problem at all. So does the middle way school agree with the mind only school?
No.
No. Okay. On what point? This is very cool, and it's a good place to end the mind only school, because this was one of the most important moments in my spiritual education. You know, I was sitting there listening to this Geshe Thupten Rinchen explain this idea that you being there and me being here, for me, have been created by certain actions that I did in the past. I've created you to sit there, and I've created me to be here, and that's why I'm seeing you at this very moment. And I said, you know, I interrupted him, unheard of in a Tibetan Buddhist class, in the monastery, okay. And I said, wait a minute, I don't have a problem with that. You know, what's wrong with that? And he said, there's nothing wrong with that. Middle way school accepts that. And I was like, boom, you know. Like it was one of the most important thoughts I ever had in my life. And I remember the place. He was sitting on his bed. I was down there on the floor, you know. And he said, they accept it, you know. So that's like, wow. 10 things became clear at that moment, you know. But then he said, but they think that the seed for that has to reside in a seventh consciousness. That's over here in the left side of your brain, you know, or something like, you know, they say there's this Kunshi number Shepa, this foundation or basis consciousness, and then storehouse consciousness, and it's over here, and that's where those seeds have to stay, and that whole thing is wrong. That they just made up. Who made it up? Lord Buddha. Okay. To explain what? How to help people who can't accept the idea that karmic seeds themselves are projections. They needed those karmic seeds to be something that existed out there on their own side in their nice little doghouse over there. Okay? In a place, you know. It was too much for them to say, the potential that creates you and me is itself a projection. It's just they couldn't handle that. So Lord Buddha, I'll make it easy for you, okay? There's a seventh part of your brain beyond your eye, ear, nose, and that's where all those little seeds stay, okay? And they pop up every once in a while, and I see you in class. Okay? That's all, okay? It's very cool. It's very cool, okay?
Do they think that also that this mind is existing out there, or is that...
Who? Oh, they would say that the storehouse consciousness itself is a shenlong. It's a mind. It's a state of mind, so it's a shenlong. It has its own identity. It does exist from its own side. Yeah. Last question?
Is the part of shenlongs and wonders that exist from their own side with their own unique karmic seed?
Let me answer one more question, by the way. Do you think Middle Way School has a problem with dividing everything into three attributes?
No.
They just don't explain them the same way. That's all. That's one important thing. And by the way, the lower infant schools can, you know, they'll say, okay, that's cool. Three attributes. Sounds okay to me. But then they don't agree with how they describe them, okay? Right. What was it? But I didn't get your question.
Is the part of the Shenlong and Young group that exists from its own side with the only unique way to be that can
exceed? She says, is the identity of Shenlongs and Young groups, which exists from its own side, is that a karmic seed in itself? They'd say no. Because karmic seed is a potential. And shenlongs are something, you know, for example, physical or something like that, or mental or something like that. So I think they would say no. The identity that they have? That's a tough question. It's got to be either a shenlong or maybe a kuntak, I don't know. I think they'd say it was a shenlong. The identity that they have. No, kundayina maybe my cat. It's not true that all kundaks don't exist. Right? There are kundaks that exist. Let me think about that. That's a good question. The identity that they have. Yeah, I think it's gotta be either a shamar or kundak because it's not a negative thing. Okay, and I think they might say it's a kundak. You know, they might say it's a kundak. It's permanent. It's unchanging. Let's say kundak. Okay. Try to prove me wrong sometime. Okay. No, I mean, it's the way you do it in the debate ground is do it that way. Okay. Congratulations on graduating from Mind Only Academy. Now forget everything. And we'll go to Middle Way. Yeah. Sorry? Oh, yeah. I'll put the Tibetan up at the beginning of the next class for that, but you're not responsible for it on your homework. Okay. Okay.
All right.
This is the end of Class 8.
You have been listening to What the Buddha Really Meant with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.